What up, y'all? It's your man, D-Real, the Black Panther, stalking the urban jungle in Vibranium Adidas, bringing you another podcast of B-Real with D-Real. He is I and I am him, to coin a phrase. And what's up? How y'all doing out there? And I guess when I say how y'all doing out there, I really mean how are you doing, because I've been doing a lot of, first of all, let me say, my weekend was absolutely fabulous. I went and hung out with some friends, like I kind of usually do, make it a point on Friday to get together with my loved ones, and we go out and we kick it and we do something. I don't know what, but I end up doing something. This particular night, Friday, we went out to dinner. It was a nice little dinner. And then, you know, we went and seen what other things we could get into. I'm not going to discuss too much of that on air. But anyway, I make it a point, I guess is what I'm getting at, to have positive social interaction with people who can tolerate being in a room with me longer than 5 minutes. And this show is kind of focusing on, I guess you could call it a self-help show, but as I always do, at some point in every last one of my podcasts, I let everybody know I am not here to make you rethink your whole life process or anything of that nature. I'm just here to present information that you may not have been aware of, and then allow you to move forward on that same path with new information. That's it. I'm not anybody's self-help guru. I'm not anybody's counselor. But, I mean, if people tend to listen to what I'm saying and go, oh, that cat's making sense, then maybe I should be getting paid for this. Off top, I think I would be remiss if I did not ask everybody, were you aware of the impact of anxiety and depression in our country? No? Okay, well, let me throw a couple stats out at you. 20% of American teenagers experience or will experience some form of depression before they become 18 years old. Okay, 6.7% of the adult population in our country suffers from anxiety and or depression. One or the other. 6.7 doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you break that down number-wise, 6.7% of the country adds up to be about 14.8 million people who are dealing with either depression or anxiety. Anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the United States. And I know when you hear the word mental illness, you automatically think something a lot more extreme than anxiety or depression disorder. But please believe, man, mental illness can happen to anyone. I know people that for years didn't have any symptoms of any kind of mental illness, but then all of a sudden, they're diagnosed with a bipolar disorder, or they're diagnosed with PTSD, or they realize they have some type of phobia of some sort. Needless to say, being in that kind of situation does not make for living your best life, for living a happy life. I know it sounds crazy, but 50% of us suffer from anxiety and depression, both of them. Okay, that I have witnessed firsthand, and I can tell you it is a terrible combination to see in someone. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. It's like things happen that you don't have control of. You don't have, all of a sudden, you don't have control of your appetite. All of a sudden, you don't have control of your emotions. All of a sudden, you don't have control of certain autonomic, you know, not autonomic, but just bodily actions, functions, things like that. And the question that I wanted to present was this. Is media, or has media become a tool for perpetuating ill or negative emotions, feelings, thought processes? And when I say media, I don't just mean social media, because I know automatically everybody thinks, oh, social media, it's people saying this on social media, it's people saying that on social media. If you don't like what's going on social media, turn it off. Well, here's the thing. In the advent of social media, it has become a useful business tool. I know many businesses who have Facebook pages, who have Instagram pages, and that is another way of reaching demographics. So when we say you should get off the social media, maybe more people would if social media did not become such an ingrained thing, if it had not become such a necessity and not an accessory. I like the way I said that. We feel like we need it, and in some cases we do. Like for me, I do an improv show, and one of the ways I reach out and communicate and let people know about what's going on with it is through social media. I would say word of mouth, face-to-face with a person, is the best way to communicate these kinds of things with them. But at the same time, if you are using social media to help you and not necessarily just on there spouting stuff and keeping, you know, potentially toxic narratives going, then yeah, you would see the beneficial uses of social media. And so my short answer to that question, at least for me, is yeah. Hell yeah, it's a tool. I mean, let's just take out the component of social media and let's just talk about media in general. Fox, CNN, BBC, C-SPAN, whatever it is that you utilize for getting your news, information, facts, whatever, they are never at a loss for a story or a situation or a process or an idea that is negative, whether it be negative about the person that the story or the article is about, or whether it just be a negative narrative in general. This person died. We're repealing this law. This politician is getting away with this. This celebrity is doing that. I mean, there is never a loss for hearing about, and I'm just going to say it, other people's bullshit. It's exhaustive. It's physically and mentally exhaustive. And maybe the problem isn't necessarily you know, the fact that the media is putting out what they want to put out, or they're putting out what they know people are going to respond to, you know, kind of like with a fish on a hook sort of a thing. And people want to hear it. People actually gravitate towards negative stuff. They want to give their opinion about negative stuff. They want to have their say about negative stuff. They want to be in the spotlight talking about negative stuff. Even here on my podcast, I notice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, when it is a hair trigger topic, a topic with the potential to have a point counterpoint or an argument or something like that. I mean, just in general, we're responsive. We're incredibly responsive. Okay, so is it so much that we respond to negativity, or we respond to the desire to create a solution to negativity? What I'm doing with this, or what I'm trying to do with this podcast, is provide some solutions to negative narratives. We know they're out there. Like right now, I'm saying in the back of my head, I'm saying to myself, the NBA championship is on and I'm doing a podcast. Do I really want to be doing a podcast right now? I would really rather be watching the game. Now, I knew a whole week in advance that a few days, at least Wednesday, that the next game in the series was going to be on Sunday around this time. And I could have taken the opportunity to say, oh, guess what? I'm not going to podcast this week either because I want to watch the game. But no, I felt strongly about this topic. And so I said, bump that. I'm going to go ahead and podcast this Sunday because I would like, first of all, to get this out and speak to people, because I know a lot of people. I mean, people I know personally, not just, you know, random folks suffer is too strong a word, but I deal with depression and anxiety. A lot of them take medication. A lot of them take serotonin inhibitors. I just recently found out, like, because I'm dealing with allergies, and I took an allergy medication, and you hear me saying it, you can catch me if you want to, I will never take a medication like that again, because now I realize what it does. It doesn't stop you from coughing. What it does is it sends when you take medication like that, it sends a message to the part of your brain that causes you to cough or sneeze or nose run, and tells it to stop. So in effect, what you're getting is not a cure, quote unquote, but something that is messing with the function of your brain. I don't know how I feel about that. And so I've been drinking teas. Cherry hibiscus cinnamon. Delish. Anyways, what I'm getting at is this. The we can make a choice to do things differently. We can make a choice to not allow media to consume our life. There can be portions of our lives that are wrapped up in media and deal with that portion of it. But the rest of it, we need to get up. We need to get out of the house. We need to go do something. Get your butt up. Go out of the house. Go hang out with some friends. I mean, that's a simple fix. And if I know my people, Sundays are the day for doing that. Sundays are for family, hanging out, kicking it with your, at least for me it is. Ironically enough, as I say that, my family ain't here right now. That's weird. But I knew I was going to be doing this, and they are on an outing, having fun, enjoying themselves. Meanwhile, I am here being the shepherd, or attempting to be the shepherd. We deal with adversity a lot of different ways. The one I just mentioned, medication. My thing about medication is this. In my profession, you know, as a social worker with people with disabilities, it amazes me how people are quick to say, I want to put my loved one on Lexapro. I want to put my loved one on Adderall. I want to put my loved one on Seroquel. I want to put my loved one on Lorazepam. If you put a gun to their head right now and ask them, what's the active ingredient in Lexapro? What's the active ingredient in any serotonin inhibitor? What is it? Okay? To be perfectly honest with you, I don't even know. I know what's in it, but I don't know which one of those is the active ingredient. You see what I'm saying? So we're talking about combining chemically different things, artificial and otherwise, to create a pill or an elixir or a capsule of some sort that you can ingest. And they have side effects. And sometimes the side effects are worse than the problems that they're supposed to solve. Now, I'm not going to tell you whether or not you should or shouldn't ingest something, but I'm just going to say this from a personal standpoint. It just like with your food, and you look on the box and you see what's in it, if you can't pronounce that shit or you don't know what it is, why are you putting it inside of your body? You don't know what kind of reaction it's going to have on you. If I can't tell you what it is, why would I be putting it in my body? And to get back to what I'm saying, these people are quick to say, yeah, give them a prescription for that. Give them a prescription for that. But if you say something like, have you thought about trying a CBD oil or CBD pills? No, that's marijuana. What? Are you kidding me? At least you know what marijuana is. You know it grows naturally out of the ground. And if you cross-pollinate it with other kinds of marijuana, you get different strains that give different effects. And some do different things, and some are helpful and beneficial. They don't just get you high and have you sitting in a room pontificating about shit you know nothing about, or eating food or falling asleep. It does so much more than that. It actually has medicinal purposes. Okay? I'm not going to tell you to give your child CBD oil. That is a adult parent choice kind of a thing. But I can tell you that I have seen firsthand the effects CBD, cannabis, hemp, those products have had on things like depression and anxiety and a host of many, many other developmental, intellectual, mental deficits has helped greatly. I was reading an article the other day about a little 12-year-old girl with a seizure disorder that started taking CBD oil, and she hasn't had a seizure for like almost 1,000 days. Come on, y'all. Let's not be our parents or our grandparents and close our minds to the possibility of other helpful outlets, things that will enable us to live a better life, even if it is holistic, even if it is quote unquote hippie, man. You know, I mean, say what you want to say. If it helps me be a better person, if it helps my family be better them, I'm all for it. I don't care about the stigma attached to it. You know what I'm saying? If CBD oil, you know, makes my kids smarter, sharper, wiser, whatever else-er, I'm not getting ready to sit here and knock it. You know, tell me about, you know, Seroquel. What is Seroquel doing for your kid? You know what I'm saying? Other than zonking them out, putting them to sleep. Oh, maybe that's what you wanted. If that's what you wanted, then all right, right on. Rock with it. I feel like that's just one thing that will help you to live a happier life. If you're dealing with some sort of anxiety, you're dealing with some sort of depression, and you've tried a holistic approach to it, and that hasn't worked for you, do what you need to do. That's what I can say. I'm just saying, for me, from a personal standpoint, and from what I've seen, cannabis products have helped people. Cannabis products have been beneficial to people. And you can poop that right out. You can pee it right out. It might sit in your system for a little while, but it's not going to sit in your system indefinitely. If you decide you don't want to use a holistic medicine, you can stop, and eventually you'll flush it out of your system. Stuff like, you know, Big Pharma is pushing. Some of that stuff stays up in your system forever, you know, and you don't know what kind of effects. Oh, side effects could be, I don't know, death. Forgive me, but I do not want to stop smoking cigarettes that bad that I am willing to take something and one of the side effects is fucking death. That's not a side effect. Death is not a side effect. Death is what the hell you're trying to avoid when you're taking medication. At least that was my thought process. You know, side effects include death. Come on now. That's not something I want to be taking. But I know people that are that desperate. And what was it called? Chantix. Chantix is what it's called. And they say it helps you to, you know, stop smoking, but it also puts suicidal thoughts in your head. Wow. I want to stop smoking so bad that I'm willing to risk killing myself. I go ahead and smoke that Marlboro, that Newport. Nah, that's not working for me. If you just joined us, we are trying to mull through some things. I'm going kind of slow. That will potentially or could potentially make for a happier you if you ain't happy right now. And I was talking about, you know, the benefits of holistic medicine versus that big pharma shit that they are just balling out of control, like, and doing like drug dealers, and we want you to stay on the comeback. You know what I'm saying? Because the money's on the comeback. It ain't in the cure, if you've ever heard that before. So we're not trying to cure you, is what Big Pharma says. We're trying to give you enough relief to keep you coming back. And it took me a while, man, to just, you know, to kind of get on a more holistic kick and leave, you know, chemical stuff alone and stuff that just sits in your system indefinitely. You feel better. I mean, physically, you feel better. I got a pain in my neck right now because I slept wrong, but that, again, is something that will pass. So I'm not really tripping on that. Another thing that really helps me be a better me or be my best me is fellowship. And just like I said, like this weekend, I hung out with some friends and we kicked it. Fellowship, I think, well, according to, and here I go, I'm going to quote Maslow real quick. Maslow was a psychologist that came out with this pyramid, which is the hierarchy of the order of priority of things that we need to make our way to what is known as self-actualization. That is the optimal everything that you can have in your life, starting with air, water, food, you know, shelter up there. And social interaction is in that pyramid. Social interaction is something that we as human beings, we don't need. We won't die if we don't get it. But at the same time, it makes for a better us. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but people who have friends or who are more social butterflies tend to be more of extroverts. They tend to be happier than people who don't. And now I'm not saying that, you know, if you're happy being a hermit, by all means, be a hermit. You know, my mom's is about the, you know, just, I won't say happy, but she's definitely content being by herself, and she doesn't yearn for the company of other people, except, you know, when she says, come visit me. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I would say like 90% of the time she's cool chilling. I mean, that's the genes I spring from. So it's good to know that I can live my best life without needing the surroundings of others. But me, I'm a Libra, so I'm social. I'm outgoing. I'm an extrovert. I naturally gravitate towards social interaction. Social interaction is a good thing. So, but at the same time, I know how to be alone and not be lonely. And I think a lot of times that's what a lot of us deal with, why we're dealing with depression and why we're dealing with anxiety, because we don't know how to be happy alone. I read, I study things, and sometimes that takes a long time if it's an engrossing, engaging topic. You want to know everything. If you're like me, you want to suck all that information up out of there. I want to know everything there is to know about a specific topic. Let me know where I can find more about this. I think that's largely the reason why I am such a tremendous nerd. My propensity and desire to read and continue to read and want to read about things has always been, you know, a really big thing. So fellowship, I think, is a huge component as well. Don't need it. You don't need any of it. But if it's something that can help make you, again, a better you, a happier you, why not try it? There's also a form of fellowship that I've noticed has become popular through social media. And, you know, things like Pinterest, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, where we share mutual interests, mutual likes, even in some cases, mutual freaking dislikes, tend to be an edifying experience and something we can get on board and fellowship together in. I saw a page on Facebook not too long ago that was called Vets Against Trump. Wow. What a very specific, eclectic group. I can name a bunch of groups like that. I mean, there are groups where people just want to get together and talk about what makes them happy, about what doesn't make them happy, and debate it respectfully. There are people like I'm on a page that's, you know, it's about political division and well, not about political division, but it delves into the dichotomy and the diversity as well as the similarities between the right and the left from a political standpoint, about how much we're the same. I mean, because it's obvious that, you know, the right and the left don't generally get along. And when two groups of people don't generally get along, it does not make for a happy medium. So when we're trying to find out what unites us rather than what divides us, that journey in and of itself is one that creates fellowship, because on course we find, gee, we're not so different except for the fact that he doesn't agree that we should live off of government funding. Oh, she's not so different, except for the fact that she doesn't agree that tax cuts should not just be for the rich. And those are ways that we find commonality, the way we find a synergy between us and are better for it. Because even though we can't see eye to eye sometimes, at least we're talking and we're not gouging each other's fucking eyeballs out. And isn't that really, you know, what fellowship is supposed to be about? Being able to communicate your dislike or your disagreement in an amicable way and to provide what you think is a viable solution. I'm in all kinds of debates on social media in different mediums about different topics on different pages. And the philosophy, the mindset I've adopted is trying to be like water, as Bruce Lee once said in a philosophical rant. Water can flow or it can crash, is what he's quoted as saying. And as water, you got the choice, depending on what situation you're in. If I'm in a riverbed, I'm going to flow. If I'm in front of something that is blocking my progress, I'm going to crash. You know, and that doesn't have to be done in a disrespectful or violent way. I can agree with you without trying to dismantle you as a person. Does that make sense? I can disagree with what you are saying. I can reject what you are saying, but not disagree or reject you. That can be done. The problem lies in that we don't take the effort to try to do that. Or rather than listen and then respond, we hear trigger words in the narrative. We hear trigger words in the conversation. We hear words that we think are meant to set us off. And those words may not necessarily be meant to set us off, but on social media, you never know, because there are trolls everywhere looking to start some shit, so we can't tell. But piece of advice that I was given that stuck with me to this very day that I think is applicable in this situation. I think I was in my sophomore year in high school, and I got into a fight, and I went to the office. I got sent to the office, and this principal by the name of Mr. Russell, I was in his office, and he was telling me to explain the situation to him. And basically, this kid was teasing me. Well, he was teasing everybody, but he got around to me, and I basically was like, you know, don't start it. And which is ironic because I'm one of those people that was always, you know, trying to get somebody's goat when I was in high school. But anyway, I told him, you know, just I'm trying to, you know, get done with some stuff in class, and I don't need you, you know, talking no shit to me, you know, because if you do, when we get outside, I'm going to kick your ass. You know, and you could say things like that back in the day. If you don't leave me alone, I'm going to kick your ass. Nowadays, that would be taken as, we're going to call the police. But anyway, the guy wouldn't stop. And sure enough, as soon as we got outside, you know what I'm saying, I put paws on him. You know, he got handled. And I went on about my business. And I got called down to the office. He's like, oh, you were fighting in the hallway, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And I explained the situation, and the principal said to me, you know, because I told him, you know, the guy was teasing me, and so, you know, that's why I kicked his butt. And the principal said to me, so profound, I remember it to this very day, you let what someone said to you control your actions. That's one to grow on, okay? There are so many instances, and especially on social media, where we are constantly letting what someone says, air quotation marks, influence our actions. If I'm on a train of thought on social media and someone says something inflammatory or just outright disrespectful, and then I respond to the disrespect in a disrespectful way, I am in effect being controlled. You are being controlled by that person's negative energy, for lack of a better term. And rather than allow the negative energy to influence me, I choose to step away from the negative energy and analyze it. How often in our everyday life do we analyze what's going on? What's going on around us? What's happening to us? What's being done for us? What's being done by us? Do we sit down and we analyze it, or do we respond to it? I get it. There are situations, especially when somebody's getting on your nerves, where you don't really want to or care to respond in a conversational parry sort of way. You know, just kind of, you know, wait for them to shoot out the negativity, and you just kind of parry it to one side or to the other, you know, while remaining tranquil, kind of like that old guy with the long white beard in the kung fu movies. You know, no matter what somebody does to him, he's just, you know, he's defending himself, but he's perfectly calm and tranquil while he's doing it. Like water, we need to flow with the situation. And rather than respond to that situation with something negative, rather than react to someone's action, we need to be on another plane and be thinking about what's being said to us. Is this being said to us to cause us grief, to cause us stress? And 9 times out of 10, most people on social media are jerkweeds anyway. And so the answer is, yep, they're most likely doing it to get a rise out of you. I know I sound like somebody's mama, but you got a choice of whether or not you respond to it. Trust me, because I'm living it right now. When you stop responding to people's crap, when you stop responding to the negative energy people give off, it kills it. It really, actually, and truly kills it. Okay? The question I presented was, is media a tool for perpetuating ill or negative emotion? 646-668-2268. Holla at me. Let me know y'all ain't all at the park at a barbecue or at a Renaissance fair or watching the basketball game. I could be talking to myself, but you know what? I do that a lot, so I'm used to hearing the sound of my voice. But anyway, like I said, is media a tool for perpetuating ill and negative emotions? As far as what we need to do about living our best life so far, we've covered holistic medicine to a degree, you know. If you puff a pass and it make the joy last, then by all means, continue. If it ain't hurting nobody, you know, a warning, though, it can turn you into a very lackadaisical mug. It can make you procrastinate, and it can make you eat a lot. So bear that in mind if you decide to become a perpetual smoker. Okie dokie, looks like somebody woke up and they're not at a barbecue or watching a basketball game. Hey!
Hello?
Hello?
D-Real, what's up? Swade here.
Swade, what's going
on?
What's going on? Hey. I ain't heard from you in a while.
I know. Missed being on here. I figured I'd give your listeners a break. They probably got tired of me, but I really liked your topic today.
Okay.
I really liked your topic today.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing about, you know, basically I guess we're talking about choose your battles. That's kind of the way I would sum it up, how you
deal
with things in life or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's the crux of it. That's the trite way of putting it. And then when we do have conflicts, how do we deal with it? How do we deal with stress or anxiety? Just how are we doing? How are we feeling? And how are we coping with things? I feel like it's kind of the gist of what your discussion is about.
Hit the nail on the head.
One thing I want to say is I definitely do choose my battles. That's for sure. It's not worth getting into an exchange with someone who isn't worth getting into the exchange. You know, it's not worth getting into it with them about, you know, if they show you that they're not listening or they're dismissing everything you say, you know, you can kind of tell. And then, you know, I just think like just so much is going on in our world right now and in our country in particular that it can just be frustrating. I think a lot of people are just maybe frustrated about the state of things. You're not sure. You feel powerless. You don't know what you can do about it. But one thing that is maybe a positive, if I can try to put a positive spin on it, and then I'm going to point out something that I think is ironic. Not letting things go is important. Because here's my example. This is what I'm getting at. Okay, so as far as, say, social media, a lot of what's going on social media, when it's not just blah, blah, blah about R. Kelly or Jesse Smollett or whatever, everyone kind of reacting to those sorts of things, it's politics. And I'll tell you right now, between 2012, like basically when the whole time President Obama was in office, I mean, I've always paid attention and been politically aware, but I slept good at night. I never felt like I needed to. I could go like a week without watching the news and then just kind of skim the headlines in a, every week. And I felt fine about how I was catching up on things. It's just so much happening now. I feel like I'm paying way more attention to everything. And a lot of people might be feeling the same way. And one thing I can say about President Trump is that he's kind of waking people up. Like, you know, like maybe it was fine to be maybe kind of take our peace of mind for granted or, you know, just take a lot of things for granted. But one thing you can say about him, he has definitely – they wanted a candidate who would shake things up. Well, he sure as hell has done that. But he's also shaken awake opposition, and like everybody is just kind of shook right now. And it's kind of made me feel like I don't want to let stuff go anymore. As much as it's not worth it to get into unnecessary, fruitless debates and conflicts, I think it's also important to not just let everything go because I'm watching the game today. Or I just want to, you know, we all just want, you know, have a drink, smoke weed, and chill. You work all week. And we just want to mind our own business as Americans. We want to feel like things are, you know, running properly. But I'm kind of calling things out now. I mean, and I like that I have a couple of forums where I can do that, you know, with like-minded people where we're not all like-minded because we agree, but we're like-minded in that we are paying attention and can have an exchange with people who are worthy of having a conversation with. Because if we don't do that, that's part of what I think leads to anxiety and stress for me, is keeping things in. You feel frustrated, but you don't talk to anybody about it. You know, you can't have a conversation about any of that. So letting stuff out, and like, for example, abortion, nobody wants to talk about that, but we've been forced to talk about that. We've been forced to talk about race lately, and it's kind of things have bubbled up, and I just think it's kind of important to, you know, as Malcolm X said, you know, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. So
exactly.
being willing to stand up for what you believe in, things that we've taken for granted as people of color or as women or American citizens, we've taken certain things as a given.
Right.
And it's not necessarily
and
like
and
that.
And at the same time, I don't want to give the impression that I am promoting being idyllic or the recipient of some hedonistic pursuit. You should be aware. Yes, I agree 100%. You should be aware of what's going on in your neighborhood, in your city, in your country, and on your planet to a certain degree. But at the same time, when we can become hyper-vigilant, and that is what I'm kind of warning against, because when we become hyper-vigilant, we become obsessive, and when we become obsessive, you know, a whole lot of bad things spring from obsession. So
true that.
At the same time, I'm not saying be oblivious to what's going on, but don't.
Yeah, I didn't think you were saying that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go to that picnic. Watch that game. You know what I'm saying? And at the same time, if something happens that you feel like everybody needs to know about, I mean, because the vast majority of us stay glued to our phones anyway. We have almost like a symbiotic relationship with our phones. So it's not like news or information is going to be out of your reach for longer than a couple of minutes at any given time.
Yeah,
but
it's at the point where even if you try to avoid it, it's going to find you. Like, you're going to be walking, you know, you can be walking past the billboard. You know, you're going to bump into it. You're someplace and the game is on, and then a commercial comes on, and a frustrating commercial. Like, it's going to find you because it's just so out there right now. That's just kind of where we are right now. That's just the tone of things. And, you know, sorry, I think it trickles down from the top. So, you know, if you work in a company and the leadership is toxic, it trickles down through the organization. And then I think people on the lower rungs interact with each other, middle management, everyone interacts with each other in a toxic manner. And I think that that's kind of what's happening with our national leadership or non-leadership, if you want to call it that, however, whichever one you want to call it. And it's kind of trickled down. It's kind of trickled down. So to some degree, it's, you know, it's kind of beyond our control. We feel like it's beyond our control. You got to take a deep breath, choose your battles, but also choose when, you know, who, and maybe even seek out a place to have that battle. I want to have this battle, but I want to have it on this battlefield over here with these soldiers. I'm not trying to fool with these people over here. And
Yes. A good battle buddy is
just
invaluable.
Kind of some grassroots concern. And I don't know when that's going to change. I mean, I don't know if there's any turning back now from just what's happened in the last 2 years. Who knows what's going to happen forward.
And but how we deal with it, you know, I think is more important than what happens, because what's going to happen is going to happen. If that's the way things are meant to go down, then that's just the path we've got to forge forward on. I think the fight is dealing with it in a coherent manner, in a like you said, unified. Because, you know, and when I think I kind of offhandedly mentioned both sides of the aisle, where I was talking about, you know, political views, you know, dueling political views being discussed mostly in an amicable manner, and that's necessary. We need that.
Speaking up is kind of self-care for me, but I'm that type of person. I mean, my career is about arguing and disputes. That's just the, you know, and that's just kind of like, I have like an activist spirit. I always have. And speaking up and speaking out is, that's literally part of my self-care program. You understand what I'm saying? Because this conversation is also about how do you cope with stress. Well, I'll get stressed out if I can't talk to anybody about it. If I can't, like, put a message out there. If I can't – but that's just one piece of it. That's just one piece of it. But being willing to be being willing to have a conflict. I mean, that's not a bad thing. That's kind of okay. Let it happen. And the way you deal with conflict, you know, I guess that's a whole nother story. But
I'm not letting
everything go anymore. I could have easily just let everything go on social media or in a lot of conversations, where I'm willing to call things out now, and I'll call it out in a nice and neutral way, and it'll only get, I only have to take the gloves off. If you take your gloves off, I'm taking my gloves off. But still finding a way to speak up and speak out, that's something that's important to me personally as a politically aware Black woman in America. That's where I'm at, like not keeping my voice quiet. So that's kind of new for some people, and it's new for people to hear other people's voices, you know, and they might want to take it out on you for bringing it up, but you didn't create the problem. You're just talking about it.
Right. And a lot of people don't understand that there's a huge, even to this day, there's a huge difference between an argument and a debate. Okay, I can debate with you in an amicable, in a respectful manner, but I don't got to agree with the shit you're saying. You know, we can do that in a respectful forum. We don't have to yell and scream and name call and debase. If we're talking about a topic, why does that have to become personal? Why does the topic become about me and you? I thought it was about the topic. And that's where a lot of people end up, you know, going off the rails because they're focused on what the person who said what they said, not necessarily what they said. So
I mean, and
yeah,
also
I guess being
willing to let opposing views float past you, not something that's offensive to you and to your spirit, but if you have a place or a forum or a circle where you can let opposing views flow past you, you don't even have to comment on it. But just being willing to expose yourself, like don't stay in an echo chamber of agreement on everything. And then don't stick your head in the sand. And don't go around picking fights. But there's a balance between all of these things. In my opinion.
That is true. I agree 100%. That's called being a well-rounded human being, you know, and not showing impartiality in any one format, you know. I can be argumentative, but I can also I know when to subside and let
stuff go past me. There's a time and place for everything.
Me.
Know when to step back, take a hot bath, drink a glass of wine. Smell.
Yeah.
Get your bag of weed out. Go for a run. Whatever it is you need to do, where you literally take a look at yourself. Even some quiet time where you're just not doing anything. That's just healthy to me. Is not doing anything at all.
Yeah, a lot of times it is. For me, I think largely music is a huge component.
Oh, absolutely.
In everything
200%.
I do. I mean, when I'm working, when I'm at my desk, I'm at the computer, I've got jazz going, or you know, or I'll have instrumentals going. You know, it makes me productive for one thing.
It's soothing.
And when I'm out, you know, I like to go to places where there's live music. I mean, even if the people suck. You know, I want to hear your sucky guitar rendition. At least you're out there trying.
Yeah.
And there's other people out here that are full of criticism, but they couldn't play a note if their life.
Letting the music resonate with your soul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, music does a lot of things for a lot of people. I mean, for me, it's soothing. It's calming. And at the same time, it can be invigorating and exciting, all of that. You know, I'll still go places every now and then and dance. Yes, that's right. I said it.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then.
No, there's science behind that. I read an article the other day about some science about how dancing is, like, good for the spirit, you know, good for the mood.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, what's the feeling that you feel that makes you want to move rhythmically? What is that? That's a very good, if I could bottle that and sell that, I could retire tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, that emotion, that feeling, that energy is I think that's, like, super healthy for human beings.
Music's a big one. That's a really good one. That's a good one. Because, and maybe even choose your music, because you can listen to some music that kind of raises your anxiety level depending on what kind of music you're listening to. If it's all amped up, and if you listen to angry music, that might not be so soothing. But maybe you even want to listen to some angry music because that's your mood and that kind of, you know, you can express
sometimes
your
you
anger by
there.
Listening to angry music. Maybe you want to listen to some Public Enemy or some Rage Against the Machine or something. But
maybe that's safer. Maybe that's safer than the first thought you had.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Precisely.
Sometimes
precisely,
I'm like,
let me go. I can remember lyrics to a song. You know, I can remember lyrics to a song from 1982. If that song comes on, I remember every word. I might not be able to remember what I had for dinner last Tuesday night, but I can remember every word to some song as soon as it, like hundreds of songs. I know the lyrics to hundreds of songs when they come on.
The power of music. A lot of times, and it's funny that you should say that way, because matter of fact, I was out Friday, and there were five of us out, and four of us are right around the same age, and then there's one person who's like, I'd say like a good 10-15 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it would be stuff, you know, that we were listening to, and you know, there'd be Al Green and Teddy Pendergrass and Atlantic Star and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, this is music right here. You know, this is, you know, but at the same time, it was kind of funny. The young person in the group, we were listening to the song Secret Lovers by Atlantic Star, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you remember the lyrics to that song.
I do.
But it kind of made me back up and think. And this young person was saying, "Oh, that's the shit y'all listened to when y'all was, you know, that's foul." You know, and I never thought of Secret Lovers that way, you know, just because I thought it was just like a pretty little song. But then it's like, you know, I hate to think about us all meeting up together.
Well, how is that worse than Nicki Minaj? How is that worse than Lil Wayne? How is that worse? You know, that's, you know,
well,
not really a brilliant observation.
Well, that was not, the point was not to say one was worse than the other. The point was to say, you can't say I'm horrible. Look at what you listen to. That was the standpoint that it came from.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, we sit around and like, I was having this argument the other night. Somebody was saying, "Oh, you talking about mumble rappers, but Dos Effects mumbles too. The stuff they say didn't make no sense." Could be, but it was more fun to listen to.
Yeah, everything was a little bit more lighthearted, mostly. Like,
yeah,
a lot of songs weren't even talking about anything. You know,
we wasn't telling women we wanted to beat the lining out of it. That doesn't even sound romantic. That sounds violent.
Yeah. Right. You know, I can feel it, but again, it's you know, I don't know about that.
She might
as an observation.
She might need her lining for other things. if you beat it out of there, she's not gonna have any lining.
I don't think any of us ever said there was no scandal back in our day. There was always scandal. Nothing really is new about, you know, a song about an affair, about secret lovers. There's nothing revolutionary about that or new. But
I just think it's the way it was said.
It's the way it was
said. We were a little more respectful with how we said.
Right.
We wasn't just, you know, rude and blunt and, you know, all out in your face with it. You know, it's like, okay, come on now. You know, part of the romanticism about it is the innuendo, the suggestiveness. If none of that, I mean, because I always tell people, I have always been more attracted to a woman who didn't 100% reveal everything, you know, that because they left something up to the imagination. But if it's all out there in the open and you can see it, it's like, that takes away a facet.
Well, what about dancing? This takes me back to that point, because Like, twerking is, like, everything now. Like, people don't even really know how to dance. I'm going to tell you the truth. Or if they do, it's not always demonstrated on the dance floor at a lot of places nowadays. You got to go to the right place where the right kind of whole music is being played to get some real dance moves out of people. Because this is all about twerking. I mean, it's just, if you go back to the 90s, people used to get down. You know, but, you know, it's just like, people used to get down in the 80s. They got down in the 70s. Dancing was, it's just different now. Just stick your ass out and gyrate like you're, you know, riding on somebody in bed on the dance floor. That, there you go. There's the dance. Okay. You know, it's usually the guy standing there and the girl is doing all that. Okay, that's your dance. All right. Let's see. That's your only dance move. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you know. If that's how you have to work it out, okay. And that brings me to another point. Hey, maybe that's self-care for some people is they need some kind of sexual outlet. That's okay. That's okay. Maybe some people just need to get laid. You just need to get laid. That's what's wrong. That's what's wrong.
That,
you know,
well, if that's the case, I know a bunch of people that need to get laid right now. And the world would be a much better place. Jeez. Yeah.
Not to get political again, but I'm mad because it's just this cock blocking legislation, these abortion laws. That's cock blocking. That's all that is. Because listen, your birth control method could fail. Like whatever you're trying to do that might be all is fair in love and war and sex and all of that. They're trying to bring real-world consequences to every single situation, whereas you have to go, this person I'm about to get down with, if something happened, am I ready to be a parent with this person? Because there's no choice. I'm talking about something that would have been hypothetical 4 years ago, right? Now we're living a reality where in some states, if anything happens, you're a parent, okay, period. That's what they're trying to, you know, these things haven't gone into effect yet. But that's the essence of, that's the outcome of some of the cock-blocking legislation. That's real buzzkill. That's real buzzkill right there. All right, so... No,
yeah,
that might be the person who was ready to get down with you, but is this the person that you can actually picture dealing with a child with if there's a mishap? That's America is great again. That's making America great again. We're supposed to be like the land of freedom and, you know, I just don't see how that's making America great again, but. You know.
Well, it could be argued that, and I think it was on both sides of the aisle, is the people making these laws, are they the people who need to be making the laws?
Mm-hmm.
A 65, 70-year-old man, the hell you got to say
yeah,
about
he
abortion?
Already did.
You're not.
He's gonna do. Yeah, it's easy for him to just, like I said, be a cock blocker now. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's my whole thought
fun.
Process. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how many women had a say in that decision? You know what I mean? Or were even around when this shit was being proposed? Because I'm like, I'm with Tupac. You know what I'm saying? A man ain't got no right to tell a woman when and where she can't create a baby.
Well, a lot of fellas,
you know,
raised, initially when this started coming up, some fellas raised some points that are tangentially related to the abortion laws, just in the sense that they started raising the point like, well, what about all the time, you know, women, you know, said it was his and it wasn't and all that. Paternity questions are not, they're kind of irrelevant, the paternity questions. Because with enacting pro-life abortion laws, you're not getting rid of any sort of paternity questions, just in the sense that now everybody's finna get DNA'd, because the choice was taken away. So everybody is about to get DNA now, you know, like just straight up. Like, she had to have the baby. She didn't have a choice. So she is definitely going to be looking for somebody to DNA. All right, that's just so that the concerns about, you know, paternity and getting caught up in child support and having to raise a child. No, DNA is going to solve that problem, and then guess what? There's going to be even more fellas having to raise a child that they maybe didn't necessarily feel ready to have. In addition to the women, but I'm just speaking to the fellas' concerns that were raised. Your concerns don't go away because of this. Your concerns are going to get worse. You're affected. It's not just a women's issue in this sense, right? It's not just a woman's issue.
Responsibility, I think, is the overlapping thing that we're trying to urge. Responsibility on a man's part, responsibility on a woman's part. If everybody's behaving responsibly, half of these problems we won't have. 9 times out of 10, most people, when it comes to that situation, are not behaving responsibly.
Hopefully this makes people more responsible, but when they're not, I mean, you're still talking about children born to parents who should have been parents. Not everybody should be a parent. So they think they're saving lives, but the whole point is, well, the parents shouldn't have had them. Well, they did. Now what? You know, you cared about the child when it was not even a fetus, it was an embryo. And then you're just going to go, oh, well, the parents shoulda, coulda, woulda. It's like, well, they didn't. You said this was about the child. So what are the unintended consequences? So I think these sorts of things are just stimulating a lot of debate and concern and frustration. No wonder. And if you're not a little bit concerned, you probably aren't paying attention to what's going on, you know, in the world.
Can I inject a question? Do you think people who are devoutly religious happier than the rest of us?
Oh gosh, no, not necessarily. Certainly I couldn't just say yes or no to that. No, not necessarily. Because I mean, some people are. I mean, there are a lot of people who are very spiritual and walk the walk, and they care for other people, and they keep themselves centered through prayer and worship and fellowship, and that saves a lot of people from their darker selves, right? But other people have just abused it, and they hide behind that, and they are just as hateful as anybody else. To me, that's the scariest kind, is to pretend to be, to use, you know, Christianity as the reason to discriminate against people. Like, because it's your religious freedom says you don't, you know, because of your religious interpretations, you get to discriminate against somebody coming into your place of business. Or you get to tell other people, no, you shouldn't have access to birth control. Or an employer gets to say, no, you know, I can pick and choose what kind of medical coverage my employees have because of my religious beliefs. Like, that's completely different. Now, there's a lot of really bitter, bitter, unhappy so-called Christians, and not just Christians, like other religions too, but religious people.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was going to say, devoutly faithful, that falls under a whole myriad of religions. But I guess the general consensus with religion is if you're doing this or you're following these tenets of this religion or you're following this habit or that habit of this religion, you will be happy. and it will give you peace. Well, I know from experience.
Well, thoughts and prayers haven't stopped any mass shootings yet. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah,
prayer hasn't stopped mass shootings, okay? Straight up. It just hasn't.
And that's what
it might be your
say.
Way of coping with it, but it's not a solution.
Right. I don't believe there is this fountain of joy that just springs eternally if I choose to follow this religion. Because to be perfectly honest with you, I've been more joyous than I've ever been when I wasn't restricted by the tenets of a specific religion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just me. I mean, I could be, you know, playing a card too much, but it's just I don't see how total control brings joy.
Like I said, for some people it might work. If you're behind bars, you got locked up and you found, you know, religion behind bars, it might have saved your soul. Like, that might work. For some people, that might work. But it's not the same for everybody. And to just try to project it onto everybody else, that's just going to promote more unhappiness. You know, I don't even think that people spouting it even really believe it. It's just a placebo. You know, they just kind of want to, okay, well, I went to church, therefore I'm all, you know, everything's fine. Well, okay. Or people who use that as a reason to not participate in our processes, our political process. Oh, I just turn over everything over to God. Well, okay, well, good for you.
Say, is God going to go in that booth and cast that vote for you? No.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a decision on your own. I mean, you can ask whoever you want to ask to guide your decision, but ultimately your hand is the one that has to make it. So
yeah, it's a cop-out, really. It's a cop-out. Some people use it as a cop-out for having to be responsible in any other way, you know. Some doctrine makes all their choices for them, so they kind of relinquish their free will and choice and personal responsibility otherwise.
I'm shocked no one religious has called in and attacked us. Anyway.
It's Sunday.
Totally,
they're still at service. They're at night service. They can't call in. They
get out when pastors say they can leave. They can leave.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a game called Black Card Revoked?
No.
Wow. Yeah.
Black Card
at some
Revoked.
Point, revoked. R-E-V-O-K-E-D.
Oh, revoked.
Revoked.
Oh, I like the title, but no, I haven't heard of that as a game. No. How is that a game?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty fun card game, and you can play it a lot of different ways, because even in the instructions it says, you know, this is black people, and we know you're going to change the rules to this game because it's what you do.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it's basically they ask questions. Like, when you were outside playing, what let you know that it was time for you to come in? You know,
oh, right.
And then they're
right, of course, yeah,
right. And you're given
what
cards
are the ingredients
that have
of potato salad? What are the ingredients of potato salad?
right. And you get a card that says A, B, C, or D on it. Okay, and then a person, they read the choices. You know, and you put a card face down for what you think is the best choice. And then at the same time, everybody turns their cards over, and the majority is what becomes the correct answer, even if it ain't the popular answer.
Well, how do you win or lose?
Well, again, there are different ways to play it. If it's an adult way, if it's all adults playing, the wrong answer has to take a shot.
Oh, okay.
Another way to play it is everybody starts off with 10 points. And the person who at the end of the game is left with the most points wins.
So you could be like not black by the end of the game.
Either that or you didn't grow up black, put it like that. And then there's geographical differences too. You know, because what mm-hmm. black people do in the South might not be what black people do up north.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, how do you eat grits? That's a regional.
Or do you put right? Do you put sugar on your rice, or do you just use butter and salt? Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's a regional thing, you know. And it even depending on who you ask, some people eat their rice with soy sauce.
True.
So yeah, you know. So I mean, it depends, you know, on who you ask. So it's a fun game. It'll have you laughing. I know I was enjoying the heck out of it.
I might have to find it. Is that something I could find, like on Amazon or something?
Yeah.
A deck of black cards or revoke cards?
Yes, yes, yes. Matter of fact, that's where I ordered my set, was off Amazon.
Oh, I'll be sure to look for that.
So,
yeah.
And they've got like different, what they call different flavors. They've got one that's like basic. They got one that's Girls Night
Advanced.
Out. They got another
black.
One. They got another one that's like the 70s and the 80s, and then they got another one that's like 80s and 90s. You
mm-hmm.
know, so it depends on what you want to specialize in that evening.
Yeah, because the younger folks might not understand the streetlight thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
kind of
vintage.
Yeah,
like you kind of should know it. You kind of should know it, but
if you were born before 1990, you know about the streetlights.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, anybody after that, you know, all bets is off. But yeah, no, I know I knew.
Oh yeah, I think
I could be
good at that.
You probably could. You might excel at it, and you can and you can educate your non-ethnic friends. Yeah, because I play with some Latin people, and the similarities are uncanny.
Oh my gosh, because they know the street lights too. Yeah,
they
might have a Spanish word
be,
for it, but they know what you're talking about.
I think it's an economic thing and not so much an
mm-hmm.
ethnic thing more than anything else. So if we all were within a certain tax bracket, you know, our parents had to be frugal in those ways.
Cause it might've been for you, just your mama yelling out the window, embarrassing you. Hey, come home, sticking her head out the window. And you hear your mom up the block yelling. That it might have been more that than the street light. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, for me it was all the above, I think. Yeah, I got it all. I mean, so yeah, I get that. I get that totally. Wait, I got about 5 minutes.
All right.
So
no, I'm done. Yeah.
It is summeration time. Is that a word?
Okay.
Yeah, I just made it a word. I'm about to summarize.
Summarize. Okay.
But
sounds
as
good.
Always, it is great hearing your voice. It is great hearing your opinion.
That little
like
bit of a call today. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. I understand. I give you a little rant time. You've earned it.
Okay. Well. All right. Well, as always, it's a pleasure. I'll hop off and listen to your summarization.
okay. Here
okay,
comes
right on,
D-Rail.
Okay,
right.
Cool.
Peace.
Sway's
always fun. She gives a perspective that we don't always think about. And that's what this show is about. I like perspectives because I am not a genius. I like to hear other people's thought processes. But as far as living your best life and being a happier you, I don't think it's necessarily about what you should or shouldn't do, but what you do in moderation and what you do that goes towards that journey of being happy. I mean, because a lot of times we aren't thinking about what makes us happy. We're thinking about what pisses us off. We're thinking about what makes us angry. And ultimately, that's toxic. If I'm sitting around thinking about what makes me mad all the time, that creates that dynamic, that creates that thought process. So if I'm angry all the time, well, then of course I'm going to have angry thoughts. I'm going to be oppositional. I'm going to be combative. So be mindful, realists, of what's going on in your world, and more than anything, how you respond to it. Don't respond in anger. That never got anybody anything but more negativity. I say analyze, and if it's something you don't want to deal with, if it's not forcing itself upon you, don't deal with it. I mean, turn your back, take its energy. This is, as Sway pointed out, we are in a state where there are things that just inherently lend themselves to depression, to sadness, to anger, to panic. And we can't give in to that, man. We got to hold on to being human beings, treating each other the way we want to be treated, talking to each other the way we want to be talked to. I know that is almost a fantasy on social media, but there are a few of us out there, like myself and Sway, that are trying to make that happen. We're trying to be amicable towards our fellow human beings, and when that's not possible, we will give our fellow human beings some space to take a fucking chill pill. And that is pretty much it, gang, with the two-minute warning. I am in the end zone. I will be back next week, potentially, if something really cool doesn't happen and I have to cancel, like Memorial Day. I will be back with another topic. I'm getting closer to diving into something debatable. And I know that's when I will see and hear my favorite people again. But until then, I will be back with another topic to make you twist your wigs on tight. And until that joyous time, I strongly suggest that y'all be good and be good to each other. Peace. The best.